Hello, I'm Casey Watson with KidLink Community Services, here to bring you the Foster Care and Adoption Life Talk podcast, where we'll be talking about foster care, the children in foster care, and how you and the community can make a difference. Welcome back to the KidLink Community Services podcast, where we talk about adoption, foster care, and all the things associated with it. And I'm trying to answer questions for all of you guys in the community that want to learn more about it. And today we have with us a very special guest, Mary Beth Conquest, and she's with Harmony Family Center. And so I'm going to ask her to tell us a little bit about herself.
Well, I am Mary Beth. I am a permanency specialist with Harmony Family Center, which is just one of the many things that my company does. We have therapy for preserving adoption after the kids are already placed. We have our focus team, which deals with a lot of recruitment for our kids that do not have families that are already in full guardianship of the state. And we have foster parent trainings all the time. And that's just a part of what we do. We have a lot of different teams that start. We're based out of Knoxville, and we just have a lot of different aspects that we do.
Okay, and I've been to your website and kind of done a little bit of research and looked around, and actually have worked with your agency before, so I kind of know some of the programs that you have that are pretty neat. I want to talk a little bit about a couple of them. You said the Focus program is one of them, and I know that is a program that I read about that works with children that are needing adoptive homes that are already in full guardianship, and they work to help those children find homes. Is that correct?
Yes. And we also branch out on a lot of biological family members that may be out in, like, not necessarily the immediate family, but the extended family. And we try to find family members to try to keep the kids with their families.
Okay. And tell me, I know you said branch out. So tell me, how do you do that? You have a child that's in custody. You're looking at all your options. Okay, is there an adoptive parent that's a candidate? You know, are we going to place them with a relative? How do you go about finding those relatives? Like, what's the process?
So we actually have a lot of different websites that we utilize that we can type in a biological parent's name, and then that will give us possible known associates. We also use social media websites like Facebook and Instagram and find relatives like through that.
It kind of sounds a little bit like a little bit of detective work almost.
Oh, for sure. It can be, yes.
And then I know, is that similar to, we talked before on a previous podcast about the Department of Children's Services doing an archaeological dig.
Yes. The focus team and actually myself and my team, we do that as well. We do archaeological digs, or art digs for short, if you can't say archaeological so well. but yeah, we do that, and we try to find, you know, supports for the kids, whether it be like teachers or old coaches or friends or just anybody that could have been even a tiny influence. We reach out to them and see if they could be either a potential support or a placement option for them. We try to utilize everything for our kids.
Okay, that was my next question. It sounds like you're looking for someone that might could be a potential placement or a forever home, but then yes, also someone that could just be a support.
Yes, and just give the kid a chance to say, call them and be like, hey, this is happening in my life. What should I do? And just give them guidance.
Okay, that's awesome. So that's the focus team, and kind of a little bit, you said the permanency team also does that. You guys also have a camp there. I've actually been to the camp.
Yes, we actually have a lot of independent camps, and we have camps for parents to support them, and they can come together and have like a support group for, you know, we have one for mothers around Mother's Day. So we just have a lot of different camps that just give people a chance to be supported with each other.
So, and on the, I'm assuming those are usually on the website, like,
yes,
people could go and register. Okay, yes. Awesome. And then I think I heard you talk about adoption preservation.
Yes.
Is that
the ASAP program?
ASAP. That was my next question. So tell us, is that for when does ASAP get involved?
So ASAP, we actually have two different kind of roles for that. We have a pre-adoption training that the parents go through. And the private providers have the chance to go through it as well. For the department's homes, they are required to go through it before adoptions. And it's just a chance to get to know a little bit more about what to expect with adoption. So that's a requirement. And then we also have a therapy program that comes in. And if, you know, 3 years after, it's a free program for all of our adoptive parents. And, you know, 3 years down the road, if they're having, you know, a hard time with something with their kiddos, they can actually reach out on our website and make a referral. And then a therapist will come into their home and help them work through that.
Okay. Because I would imagine if someone adopted a child that was like 6 years old, that everything might seem relatively smooth, but then eventually that child's going to turn into an adolescent. If they've had a traumatic past, yes, all kinds of things could probably pop up. So you're saying that's a free service if they have gotten that at their adoption, so that, yes, they could utilize that to help them work through that.
Yes.
Awesome. Awesome. So that's a little bit about Harmony, some of the programs. And so now, knowing all of those tools that we have in our toolbox, let's go back and kind of talk about your role and what you do, because once children are in foster care, of course, we want to reunite them with their families. That's our first and foremost. That's our goal always. Yes. But sometimes that can't happen.
Correct.
And so that's kind of where you step in. Yes. And so I kind of want to talk about how that process looks, and then we'll kind of make reference back to how the Harmony services plug in when they're needed. So let's just say we have children and a child, and it's looking like they're not going to be able to return home. And so the DCS will work to get that paperwork completed to put the child in what we call full guardianship, meaning that they are now eligible for adoption. So in your role, when do you become involved in that? And like, what does that look like?
So for me, most of the time when I get involved is when adoption is added initially to the goal. And then once TPR termination is for parental rights is put into the courts, they'll go through that process. And then once TPR is filed and we have a court date, that's really where I come in, and I give the parents, you know, the current description of the child, which basically just tells everything about the child's life, what they like to eat, what they don't, how they like to sleep, what they like to wear.
I've seen that form, and I've also seen parents' faces when you take them a form and you say,
page form,
you've
and
got
say, here
four,
you go.
Four kids in your home, and we're all going to be eligible for adoption, and we need you to fill out these four 16-page questionnaires.
Yes, yes, and I can tell which one they did first, because they're always longer in
of
length,
course.
And then, you know, it gets shorter as the child goes on.
Of course.
But yeah, so I do that. I also sign them up for the pre-adoptive class if they need it. I forgot to mention it's only a one-time class. So once they take it, if, you know, 3 years down the road they want to adopt again, they've already taken it. And they don't have to redo it unless they want to.
Oh, good, good.
So I forgot to mention that piece. So I get them referred for that. And then I start gathering all their documents that they'll need for the presentation book, which is basically a book that contains all of their medical records, their birth records, their educational records, just everything that the child acquired while coming into custody. And then that way we can give the parent that book. And I also write summaries.
So back up to the book for a minute.
Yeah.
So I, in another lifetime, actually did the job that you do. So I know that I don't want to make light of or minimize the amount of work that is that the department does to make sure that adoptive families have all the information they need. Because someone who does it every day that's a whiz at it, like you are, says, oh, then I get all their records and I put them in the book and I take them. Sometimes we have children that are medically fragile. Sometimes we have children with extensive psychiatric backgrounds. And when you say book, it's a binder.
Yes.
It's usually at least 4 inches. The binder. And, you know, and I remember one particular case I had, I delivered 7 binders to the parents' house.
It full can of, get lengthy.
Yeah, full of the records. So I think that's important to note, because one advantage of adopting from the department is that you do get an abundance of information. And you guys work really hard to make sure that there's no like stone left unturned. Yes.
Yes. We try to do our best to make sure that all of that is covered.
So you have the book, and then you said you write the presentation.
Yes, the pre-placement and presentation summary. So it is basically how they came into custody, the referral section on why, like everything that led up to it. It has history of trauma, like everything that we know that that child went through. And of course, we won't know everything that comes in, but if it is documented, it is in that. It's in the summary. Like I said, the current description goes in there. So everything that the child likes, their interest, how they like to dress, just everything. Then we put their parental history in there. And any family members go in there as well.
So when you go to present this child to a potential family, do they get this presentation?
Yes, they get to keep it.
Does it have all of like the parents' information, like their names or what?
No, we actually redact all of that information because with some of my kids, it is a completely new family and that they don't need that information to make a decision.
And when you say new family, I think what you're saying is some children before they're in full guardianship are already in a home that wants to adopt them.
Yes.
So they've been to meetings. They could have even met the parents, so they know them. But if it's a parent that's like just inquired about the child through one of the sites we're going to talk about,
yes,
they won't get that information.
Correct.
They just get the information that they need.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense.
And that's usually just information regarding the child. And yes, the parent's history is in there, but not necessarily the names or like birthdays.
Would it
or
say
anything?
Like mom, age 35?
Yes.
History
and it'll
of,
say, you know, it'll say their race, like how much they weigh, their eye color, everything like that. So that one day if the child is reading it, if it's a baby that came into custody, they'll say, oh, I got my mom's eyes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's awesome. And also, too, I'm thinking that it would also allow if a child, you know, when they're 24, if they develop high blood pressure or something, is stuff like that indicated on there?
Yes.
To like family history with that?
There's actually a section, hereditary conditions.
Okay.
So
okay, yeah.
that all goes in there too. It's important to know like the birth records and all of that too.
Okay. So let's assume let's take a hypothetical situation that you have a child that is, they're in a foster home, but they're not in a adoptive home and you've got to go find that parent. And so sounds like you've written the summaries.
Yes.
You know about the history of the children. So then what are some tools you use?
We actually have several different websites. We have Adopt Us Kids that we put our kids on. We have Tennessee Kids Belong, Parent a Child. And then a lot of the times, if it's a harder to place child, they'll be in private providers. And then, so they actually have websites of their own that the kids will be featured on.
Okay. So when you say websites.
Yes.
I know about this world because obviously, I work in the same field you do, but I know that when I first started working in this field, that was a little weird to me.
Yes.
When I explain it to other people, it's kind of like eHarmony for adoption.
Yes.
Yes. For lack of a better term.
Yeah.
So
it's definitely like presenting and, you know, like it's definitely like that.
Right. And so let's just take that Adopt Us Kids website, for instance. Can anyone go on that site and see those children?
Yes. It is a public website. However, if you have a home study, you can actually register on there, and you can say that you're a licensed parent, like foster parent or adoptive parent, and they can actually see privileged information that other, like the general public, can't see.
Okay, so the profiles that are public will be more generic.
Yes.
And then if you were, I would like to say you were serious about adopting, if you had taken that extra step, then you can see a few more details to maybe see if it's a good match or not, right?
Yes.
Okay, and speaking of matching, I think this is a great feature on that website that you guys can use sometimes. Tell us about that matching process.
So there's actually a Find a Family button, which is fantastic for us recruiters, because it goes in there and you put in, you know, a kid's needs. So, like, if they have, you know, an IEP at school, or they have, you know, like special stuff, you can put all of that in there, and then it actually populates for parents that are okay with those behaviors. And then so the ones that come back are potential families that you can reach out to.
So you have like a profile you put in of the child with strengths, needs, whatever. Yes. It goes in there, and then on the other end, the parents have filled out
what they want.
The same thing.
Yes.
And then it basically just matches. Is that right? Potential matches?
Yep. And it does it for all 50 states. And it's just a great tool for us to use. And it's actually wonderful to use. So,
and I would think for parents that might be listening that think, oh gosh, you know, we have a home study. This is a good resource we didn't know about. Let's see if we can get registered on it. It would be good when you're filling out your own profile. I know when working with families, sometimes I have families that are afraid to tell me things that they don't want a parent because I think I'm going to be like, oh, you can't be a foster parent. Right. Oh, well, oh, what? You mean you won't parent anything? Well, then forget it, you know?
Right. And I feel like parents forget that everybody has, you know, what they can't, their deal breakers. You
right.
Know?
And I always use, and I think you've used this before too, as an example to kind of tell parents, you know, I have dogs. Dogs are part of my life. I could never work with a foster child that was afraid of dogs or mean to dogs, or I mean, yes. that wouldn't be a good match for me. So right. that being said, when the parents fill out that profile, it's important for them to be honest,
right?
So that the matches are good.
Right. Correct.
Yeah. And because I, from experience, I know that sometimes, you know, people are just afraid. I don't think it's just a, you know, oh my gosh, I don't want to say I won't parent that. I'll be a bad parent if I admit that. I don't.
Right. But you just got your things that you like and what you don't like. Yeah. So set yourself up for success.
Exactly. And that's what you guys try to do on the other end by yes. filling out the children's profile in detail.
Correct.
Yeah. Awesome. So, okay. You've got a profile up. And a parent's, let's just say you pull those matches and there's three families that pop up as a potential match. What happens?
So for me, I reach out to the families and I just say, hey, you know, I am the permanency specialist for such and such. You know, you came up as a potential match. Here is the profile. Let me know if you want more information.
Awesome. So if they say yes, I know, and we know from previous podcasts, we've talked a lot about teaming and how important the teams are that work with all these children. So you take, if they're interested, you get their information, home study usually.
Yes.
And it goes back to the team.
Yes. And then we have what is called a selection CFTM, to where we talk about how we feel the parents would be and how the child would do with the parents and if we feel that it would be a good match. Or not, because sometimes, like, yes, you get a potential match, but it just, we know that it wouldn't be successful for the child. And like I said, we want to set the kid up for success, and it's going to be their future home. So we have to look at all aspects of the families and, you know, what they, their activities that they like to do, if they have like a similar lifestyle. So we just do all of that. And then if we do think it's a good match, then I usually reach out to the family and I, you know, give them a call and I'm like, hey, just so you know. And in the meantime, we talk to them and I let them know, hey, we have a selection meeting coming up. I'll let you know what the team thinks. So they're probably expecting my call, cause I usually let them know when the meeting is. So then we start the process of selecting them.
Right. So in this process too, you have three families. Yes. One gets selected. That means two don't.
Correct.
I've had to make that phone call before. And so I want to mention this for people that may get involved and go this route, that I've called families before that have not been a match. And it was not because they weren't a great family, but because right. you said maybe their interests were different.
Yes.
Or, you know, maybe I've had children before that said, I refuse to move north of Kentucky. And maybe this family, you know, was in Montana. So for that reason alone,
right.
it wasn't going to work. But I think it's important for families to know that too, like, because we have so many kids that need a home, once you know that there's a family and kind of what they like and that they were a good family, you know, I've actually thought of another child that, oh, this one might be a better fit. And been able to still help that family, you know, when they're route to adoption.
Yes.
So, and I think that's really neat. I mean, that's worked out a couple of times. I think those of us that have been doing it for a while, our wheels are turning 365 days 24 hours a day of, okay, who would be a good parent? Would this be a match? Would that be a match?
So, all the time.
All the time looking. So you have this election. They start. What's the next step? Okay, you've been chosen. What happens?
So if they are a Tennessee family, then we just have to talk to placement and get that going. Usually we do not tell the kiddos until everything is squared away. Like, we don't tell
them. When you say tell the kiddos, you mean you don't, a family's been selected.
Correct.
And do you wait until, like, the family says yes, you've checked them out, per se?
Yes.
Before you mention it to the child?
And so the next step would be, we talk to the parents and we're like, hey, you've been chosen. And then what we do is we take that presentation book that I talked about in the presentation summary, and we take that and we go present the child to the family.
What if they're in Colorado?
We do everything virtually. Okay. And we still send them the book and we tell them, hey, just so you know, if you choose not to move forward, then we're going to need that book back. Because like you said, sometimes they're pretty lengthy, so we need them back.
Hours and hours and hours of research in those.
Yes. So we do that. And then if the parents, they can, usually how I like to do it is I like to have all of the team members. That way we can, you know, talk about the child. If they have any questions that maybe aren't in the summaries, then we can use the team and somebody from the team can answer those questions.
Okay, so you tell them about the child, you know, in more depth than they read about on the profile.
Yes, so they actually are presented with all of the information. So about the everything that we know about this child, they'll know.
Awesome.
So that way they can make an informed decision about if they think that they would be a good, or the child would be a good fit for their family as well. Because a lot of the times the parents have, you know, kids of their own, or, you know, they just want to make sure that it matches well with their family as well.
Right, of course. So let's say it does, and there's a transition period, I know, where you do visits first. You do phone calls, visits. Yes. We don't just pick the child up and drop them off at the new home.
No, we don't. No. Because sometimes everything looks great on paper, but it doesn't click in person. So we like to have, you know, transitional period and visitation so that the child can get to know the family can get to know the child, and it makes sure that it clicks.
So once that happens and they move there, how does adoption look after that? Or what happens?
So the child has to be placed in the home for 6 months before we can move forward with adoption. And that is just so that we can make sure that, you know, it's a good fit and everything clicks.
Okay, so tell me this. I'm going to ask you a question to make you think here for a minute. Do you have a favorite adoption story? Do you have a feel-good, like, something amazing that happened or a great match that you made?
I do, actually. There is a 10-year-old that I have matched, and he is now in the home, and the 6 months is coming up, and he has made like his first snowman this past winter, and he is just flourishing in this home, and it's wonderful.
Awesome. So, and about how many adoptions, like how many of that's one story, about how many do you think, I mean, you personally, about how many adoptions do you think you might do in a year?
In a year, probably close to 20.
Wow. So 20 kids, that's amazing. 20 kids in Tennessee have a permanent home because of you.
Yes.
So how many people are on your team?
We have five.
So does everyone, all six of you, do about the same?
Yeah, we're right now, the Mid-Cumberland program is rocking out adoptions. We're doing fantastically. We each try to get all of them done in a timely manner, because a lot of the times for our families, it's more than the 6 months. The kids have been in their homes for years, and they're ready to
have
their forever
child. And so when they've been in
their
homes for years, it's... not necessarily. I want to get this straight. They're not waiting on you.
No, no, no. No. It's just the whole process, because sometimes they are placed in that home the day that they came into custody.
Exactly.
And so sometimes you have to wait for the whole process to be done and go through the whole termination of both parental rights. So sometimes it does take years for it. And so sometimes it's
the longest part is the wait. It sounds like if there's an identified home, once that court date happens, you guys make things happen.
Yes. We actually try to do it within 60 days of when that child enters full guardianship.
So I'm kind of going back and doing the math. So about 20 a year times six, that's at least 120 adoptions. And that's just in, you said, Mid-Cumberland.
Right. So the surrounding counties of Davidson County.
Alone.
Yes.
So, and there are permanency teams. DCS is divided into regions.
Yes.
Mid-Cumberland is the region you work in, where those numbers we just talked about. So there's regions all throughout the United States that are working hard and producing probably close to those same numbers across.
I hope so.
Yeah. So the important thing is, I think that we know that all those adoptions are happening. And unfortunately, just as many children are coming in on the other end to start the process.
Yes.
Start the process. So if someone, let's say someone's listening and they're like, okay, you know, this sounds something good. I would love to think about adopting in Tennessee, because we should also say, let's go back here really quick and tell them, what are some of the pros of adopting a child from the Department of Children's Services?
So a lot of the times, depending on what the child, you know, like how old they are or what, if they have a lot of special needs. A lot of the times the state will actually pay the parent. So each foster parent gets a daily payment. The state actually will pay the parents a daily rate for adopting.
So they're going to get a subsidy. I know they get a subsidy when they're foster parents.
Yes.
And it may not be the same.
Right. And it's not the same. But a lot of the times, like, you will get paid. Now, there are some circumstances if it's, you know, a baby and they don't have a lot of issues. A lot of the times they won't qualify for adoption assistance. But sometimes they do get paid.
But in the big scheme of things, I hear a lot of times, and people that don't understand or have just heard things, it's not expensive to adopt a child from the state of Tennessee.
No, and actually we, DCS will pay up to $1,500 for their attorney fees. We have a lot of great attorneys that we work with that know that that's our fee. And they'll charge that amount. So the parents won't have to pay anything in attorney fees or legal fees.
So basically they just need to provide that loving home and give the child support.
Yes.
And nurturing that they need.
Yes.
Okay. Awesome. So someone says, gosh, I didn't know you could adopt, and I didn't know that it wasn't going to cost me $20,000.
Right.
It's something that we can actually afford to do. I didn't know they would even help potentially with the subsidy if the child had needs. So what do you recommend the first steps being?
Just either go to the DCS website or any of the private providers around and just start the process. And a lot of times they have I want to become a foster parent. So,
right. Like kidlinkservices.com. You can go to that website. We actually have a button on our website that, you know, become a foster parent. You're going to type in your information. And if you do so, that email is going to go straight to me, actually. And I can get back in touch with you and get you signed up. We have classes regularly. I actually have a class tonight, class of folks getting ready to go through and be foster parents, and we're happy to get you going with that. Also, you can call us at 877-714-1313, and I will actually answer the phone, and I can help you that way as well. So we are always, always looking for parents that want to adopt, parents that want to foster. And our main goal is just to find the homes for all these children in Middle Tennessee that so deeply deserve one for everything that they've been through.
Don't make me cry.
Okay. So I want to thank you for all the work that you do. I've actually worked with you. I've worked beside you. I know how hard you work. I've seen you shed tears over adoptions. I've seen you shed tears over things that didn't work out so great. And it's a tough field to be in, and you have to be resilient, and you just keep going and keep doing the great work that you're doing for all the children that we serve.
Thank you.
So that's about it, guys. If you have any questions, as always, like I said, reach out to us at kidlinkservices.com or call us at 877-714-1313. And until next time, thank you from KidLink.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of KidLink Foster Care and Adoption Life Talk, where we focus on linking kids and families to hope, healing, and trust. If you're interested in becoming a foster parent or learning more about KidLink, visit our website at kidlinkservices.com.